I'm Annie.
And I'm Ellie.
And we are
Those Spooky Bitches.
Okay, what a wonderful Sunday.
It's
it's the Lord's Day.
Yes. It's too hot.
It is warm. It's a scorcher. Hot. Okay, so we have something to share. We were going to do Ed and Lorraine this week. That was the plan. The plans changed.
This is Freaky Friday.
Why did the plans change, Ellie?
Because weird things were happening on Annie's side.
So, both of us had some interesting experiences after our possession podcast.
Yours was way more interesting.
It was on video, so if you are, I took it on video. I didn't save the video, but I do have witnesses. Because it was on Snapchat when it was all happening. So if you were one of the people who got the Snapchat video, you know what I'm talking about. But if you were not, then let me share. So we recorded last week's podcast in my bed because we like to be comfortable.
Yes.
Can anyone relate? Yes. So we were recording it in my bed, in my bedroom, downstairs, and I probably shouldn't tell too much of the layout of my house. I'm like, exactly how you get in. I'll leave the back door unlocked, you can come in. No. Take two lefts. And in my bedroom, we recorded the episode. It was fine. We moved on with our lives. A couple of days later, I'm sitting in the living room, which is not in my bedroom. It's in the living room. And I hear, like, my Alexa device talking, which she might talk now because I just said her name. I don't know. So we'll call her Alice so I don't summon all the devices. I hear my Alice device talking, and it's like, I'm sorry, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I'm sorry. Why are you talking in the other room? No one was in there. It was just me in the living room, and she's talking in the bedroom. So I'm like, okay, Alice is talking to herself. And then she pauses, like someone answered her, but there was no noise. And then she answered nothing. Alice was talking to herself. She had a full conversation with herself in the bedroom. And then suddenly started playing music. Just playing the music. So I came into the bedroom because I was like, what is Alice doing? And I'm like, Alice is playing music by herself. Okay, cool. So then I told her, I said, Alice, stop. And she spoke another language. And I was like, I'm sorry, was that another language? So I said, Alice, stop. And she would not stop the music. She just was saying things in another language. And then eventually I got her to stop playing the music and I walked away. And I was like, you know what? That's enough of that. I've had, like, enough.
What language are you speaking right now?
I don't even know. Don't know.
Don't care. Just stop.
So that was enough for me to be like, well, okay. I'm not interested in that. No.
Nah. No.
So we're just going to take a break from the demons for a minute.
Just for a minute.
Do you want to share anything about your week?
So, something weird happened to me too, and then I'd come to find out it wasn't just me, but I was watching one of my favorite TV shows, and they were about to summon a demon, and then my, like, power went kind of flicked in the basement, but then my mom said that her Roku also went out at the same time. So I thought it was just me, and I asked her, and she said it was nothing, and then she remembered, and she's like, oh, wait, no, mine went off too, so.
Well, maybe it's your whole house.
Yeah, maybe it's the whole, well, I mean, I wouldn't doubt that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so like at first I was like, okay. Alrighty. But no, actually coincidentally, because at first it was a little freaky, but then I was like, you know what, it's okay, stuff happens, whatever. And I actually started reading The Exorcist this week. And let's just say this, I've been reading like horror stuff. I say horror really weird apparently because someone thought I said horror at work the other day.
Oh.
So we'll just say dark and scary stuff. And I've been reading like really, really bad crime novels, stuff like that, since I was probably Reagan's age, like age 11. Things that I remember that were absolutely like people being assaulted, women being assaulted with like daggers shoved up inside. You know what I mean?
Oh,
some crazy stuff that a child should not be reading.
Correct.
But I was above that level.
Yeah.
I have to say, this is probably the darkest book I have ever read.
That's crazy.
It's really great. Don't get me wrong. Like, it is a phenomenal book. It's right there with the movie. Of course, there's a lot of the in-between stuff you don't see in the movie. But I will say, I guess it's because this is happening to an 11-year-old girl. It's not happening to adults or, you know, I don't know. Yeah. It's just something about, this is the darkest book I've ever read. I only have like 2 hours left in it. And they're just now realizing, you know what? Maybe she really is possessed. They spend all this time, like, doing the scientific stuff, which they should.
Yeah.
And we're really now getting into that part where it's like, I only have 2 hours left. And then I started another one, too, called My Best Friend's Exorcism, which is very interesting. It's like a 1980s, like, it's kind of this, like, Stranger Things kind of thing. I don't know, I can't explain it. But I just started that one, too, so I'm really, like, getting into that one.
Love that.
So, yeah. I don't know. It hasn't been bothering me so much lately, so I'm just like, whatever, you know, it's all good. And if there's anything weird happening, I'll be like, nope, you can go back where you came from.
Yeah. We just had a moment where we were like, let's just take a quick pause.
Yeah,
let's
we're going to take another little, you know.
And then we'll get back into Ed and Lorraine another time. Yes. But for this week, we're going to cover Parricide, which is the homicide of your parent. So we're going to talk about some people who killed their parents.
Gotta love it.
So, happy late Mother's Day. Let's talk about people who kill their parents.
Like I said, Mother's Day and Friday the 13th in this same week. Like, Mrs. Voorhees and Jason right there.
Yeah.
Together. Yes. I love it. But, yeah, I do want to say one thing, too. I know that it's, like, typically not something we do, like, shout out or whatever. But one of my bestest friends has... Yes, the one that we discussed last time.
I'm like, the one with the secret life?
Yes, the one with the secret life. She has been... She goes through a whole bunch of stuff medically. Like I said, that's how we met. Mm-hmm. But this week has been very, very bad for her because she had a surgery. She's been needing it for a while. She had issues and complications there. They sent her home. She went right back to the emergency room. And things are just not looking great so far right now for her. Like, I mean, she's okay. It's just that things keep happening.
Yeah.
And I just was like, one of those things where, like, if you guys wouldn't mind just, like,
sending some vibes.
Yes, vibes.
Give
whatever,
us your juju.
Just whatever it is you believe in. If you wouldn't mind sending that to her. I love her more than anything, and I just hate that she has to go through all the stuff that she does, but this has been a very bad week for her.
Yeah.
Very bad week. So.
I hate to hear that.
I just wanted to pop that in there. We love you. I love you.
I hope you feel better.
Yeah. It's complicated, but, you know, I just wanted to say, since we have discussed her, that that's kind of what's been going on, and
yeah,
it's been bothering me all week.
I'm sorry to hear that. That's really rough. It's hard when you are in the throes of a medical complication that when you have no control over it,
yeah,
and you just have to, like,
your body's literally trying to just
yeah, and then you get your hopes up that a surgery will help, and then it makes it worse or changes it, or it's hard to keep adjusting to things like that. So
I hate to hear that. So yeah, I wasn't trying to, like, get anybody low right there.
No. But well, I mean, I don't know if you can get much lower than killing your parents.
That's true.
So I feel like maybe you uplifted us
so
a little.
True.
Maybe you just brought us up a little.
And then too, it was so funny to me because, like, when we were thinking of child killers, I would have been like, I just thought about this and, like, the afterthought of it'd be so funny if, like, one of us did, like, you know, people that killed their children versus children killing their parents, and we got the totally wrong
idea. We were backwards.
Backwards,
yeah.
Yes. I was kind of like, wait, maybe we should discuss that that's what we're doing. But it looks like we did the same thing anyway.
We did the same thing. Well, the thing is, you know, it's actually really, parricide is actually really rare. I was looking at it, and it's only counted for 1% of all homicide cases in the U.S.
Wow.
So it's super rare. It is way more common that parents kill their children than it is that children kill their parents.
I mean, even in nature, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of parents eat their young.
Yes. So, oopsie doopsie.
Yeah.
but yeah, so I will start. I have a case about Stacey Lannert is who I'm talking about today. She has been covered several times by others, of course, but I found her story to be very inspiring and interesting, so that's why I'm starting with her.
I feel honestly, though, that, like, with so many murder podcasts out there, we're all going to cover the same stuff anyways. Like, incidentally, I literally go out of my way now not to listen to anyone else because I don't want anyone thinking that I'm, like, stealing their words.
No, I get that. But I also feel like it's just a different format. So yes. We're fine.
And I'm like, we all have our own personalities too. So.
Right, exactly. So we'll start out with Stacey Lanert. I can't even say her name right. Okay, so this takes place in July of 1990. But first, I'm going to start with a little background. What if I just accidentally erased it all my notes?
Oh no.
I would have cried. Okay, so this is the story of Stacey Lanert. She was born to Deborah and Thomas. Basically, Thomas, a little background on the family. Let me get my life together. Oh my God, she's caffeinated and she has ADHD. It's not going to work out well. Stacey Lanert was born on May the 28th in 1972. She was born to Thomas and Deborah. Deborah and Thomas both had really dysfunctional families. They just both came from, like, not great families. Like, Thomas, I don't really have a lot of details on his family, but it started out all right, ended up not so good. That's basically the consensus. And then Deborah was in a family where her father started... Oh, trigger warning.
Oh, yeah.
Sexual abuse of minors, physical abuse, emotional abuse, murder. So, it's not funny. Deb started being abused sexually by her father at the age of 11. In fact, in Deborah's family, there was a lot of incestual abuse. It just was kind of like, I guess, how the family was. And so, she was used to being abused by her father sexually and in other ways as well, but predominantly sexually. And so, when Deb turned 18, she met Thomas, and she was like, oh, I can... you know, be protected by this man who's not my father and go off with him and fall in love and marry him and get out of the hell that is my home. And so she did. She saw Thomas as an escape and she took it and got out. But unfortunately, she wasn't doing well with her radar of who is a good person. So her radar's a little broken. So
after everything that's happened to her, I mean, that tends to happen.
She didn't know. She didn't have any other way to measure what a good man was because the first man in her life wasn't the best at anything. So, anyway, she married Tom, and they had a pretty decent life together. Of course, they started with being married, and then they had Stacy in 1972, and then 2 years later, they had her sister, Christy. So it was just the four of them, a cute little family, just living life. You know, Tom was working as a financial assistant, and Deb was a stay-at-home mom, which is what most of the moms were at the time in the middle class. So she was just staying home with the girls, raising them. Tom was going to work, getting money, providing for the family. You know, Stacy loved her dad. She looked up to him so much. She was a daddy's girl. She thought he could do no wrong. She thought he would fix anything, any problem, any issue that they had. Tom would make it better for them. He provided for them. She felt safe with her dad. She would curl up in his lap and listen to him talk, and he would give her life advice, and you know, she would listen to him. And she remembered that even one time he said to her, don't ever let a man treat you, or I think he said boy, but don't ever let a boy treat you badly. You know, he would just kind of, you know, take his time with her. She was his favorite, you know, she was really his favorite. And that can be a sweet sentence or an evil sentence. Yeah. Yeah. So she was his favorite, and, you know, she really loved her dad, and she would sit, like I said, sit in his lap and just listen to him talk, and they had a really special, special bond. But unfortunately...
After a certain age, though.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Speaking of that, at the ripe age of 8 years old, in the second grade... Stacy was abused by her father for the first time. He had her start playing a game called Touching Tongues, and eventually that led to other touching happening, and he told Stacy that she needed to keep it a secret, that this was something that you just did with your favorite daughter. And because Stacy was the favorite daughter, that's why they were playing the games together. And eventually, it kept escalating.
I'm already rooting for Stacy now, anyways.
Yes, right. as we all are. So eventually, unfortunately, it keeps escalating as abuse does, and Tom begins to R-word Stacy frequently. He would get really, really drunk, and that's when he would be so drunk that Deborah, the mom, would kick him out of bed and be like, listen, you are lit. You need to get out of my bed. And he would find his way to Stacy's bed, and that's when he would R-word her. And he would say really awful things to her. He'd call her terrible names. He would threaten her. He would, you know, invalidate her, emotionally abuse her, just really terrible stuff. If at any point she tried to resist, he would physically abuse her and be very violent. Tom told Stacy that Deborah knew what was going on, so there's no sense in telling your mom. So, you know, you don't need to tell anybody because, you know, Deborah already knows, so she's not going to help you. She's letting it happen, so there's that. And Stacy was like, why the hell would my mom, you know, imagine being 8, 9 years old, why would my mom let this happen? Like, yeah. I don't understand.
That's the people that are supposed to be protecting you.
But she just didn't know, so she just, you know, kept it a secret. She did her best to keep it a secret at that time. So Stacy had her sister Christy.
I'm sure she was also like, okay, this is gonna get dark.
Yeah,
because I went through that. Not my father, you know, my mother, but I went through that when I was a kid. And you know, you're told to keep things a secret. You're told, you know, this is something we'll just keep between us. Mm-hmm. Things like that by people you trust. So I can only imagine that she's like, okay, why am I not being protected? But at the same time, like, okay, well, you know, Dad says it's okay. Mm-hmm. The trust of a child, and that I can't stand. People to me do deserve horrible things that hurt children.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't even know what I would think if I was in that situation. I can't imagine what Stacy was thinking or feeling, you know. I just can't imagine.
Yeah.
You know, starting so young too, it's basically all she's remembering.
Exactly, it's all she knows.
Is that. So, she did have her younger sister, Christy, as well. And Christy was 2 years younger. She, at this time, Tom was only very angry and very drunk and would beat Christy, but he did not sexually abuse her at this time. And then over the course of time, like in the first couple of years, Stacy's like, this is wrong. This shouldn't be happening. This is wrong, right?
Yes.
This is wrong.
Yes.
I know this is wrong. It doesn't feel right. I don't like it. This is abuse, whatever. So she reaches out and she tells her babysitter, and she's like, Tom, Dad is raping me, and I just need someone to know this is happening in my house. And Stacy starts to try to avoid Tom as much as possible. She tells the babysitter, she's like, surely to God, these people are going to help me.
Yeah, same thing.
So the babysitter goes and tells Deb, and Deborah doesn't do anything. I don't know if it's because Deborah was afraid of Tom. I don't know if Deborah was thinking of her own abuse and was just trying to be in denial about it or didn't want to acknowledge it. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Why Deb doesn't really intervene at this time. She just, you know, just lets it be. And then she decides in 1984 she wants to divorce Tom. And so she leaves the girls with Tom.
What?
Mm-hmm. That was my thought. I'm like, why would you do that?
Exactly.
Dumb. But okay.
And at that point, too, you know what? You deserve punishment as well for letting all of this happen.
Absolutely. Are you kidding? So she leaves Tom. Now Stacy's 12 years old, and she's like, my mom just abandoned me. You know, like, just left us together with Dad and is gone. And I'm here trying to survive this nightmare. For the last 4 years, I've been dealing with it. It's only going to get worse, you know. So Tom is super depressed because Deb is left, and he starts drinking more. And because he starts drinking more, he starts R-wording Stacy 3 to 5 times a week. Because, you know, he just wants to, because he's
a horrible human being.
Yeah. So Stacy's like, I think maybe I can call these, like, child abuse hotlines that exist because this is abuse, right?
Yeah.
And then she convinces herself that it's not, they're not going to help her because it's sexual abuse. And she thought you could only call if you were being physically abused.
Sweet.
I know. So she doesn't get to get help through that. And so she's hitting her teenage years. She's got all of her, like, hormones are crazy. She's got all this emotional abuse. Like, it's just a rough go. So she starts trying to do things to cope. She engages in promiscuous activity and sleeps with, like, up to 18 men in a year.
Which happens with that.
Which is very common for people who have... You kind of go one way or the other. Mm-hmm. You either shut down completely or you go full force the other way. And she is just trying to, like, numb the pain, I guess. And she also starts shoplifting. You know, just things that you... Not that you would do, but, I mean, it makes sense why she's doing these things. She attempts, trigger warning, unaliving. She attempts suicide 3 times, but is not successful. And she ends up dropping out of high school her senior year. And she decides she wants to leave her dad's house and move in with her mom and her stepfather. So she must have had a decent relationship with her mom to do that, but maybe not. Maybe it was awful and she just wanted to get out of one prison to go to another, so to speak. So she goes and moves in with her mom and her stepfather, and she gets a phone call from her little sister, Christy, and Christy's like, hey, dad is raping me, so I need help. Now, remember, Christy is 15 at this time, and Stacy's 17, and Christy says, dad is forcing me to get drunk, he's forcing me to drink alcohol, he's sexually abusing me, he's still hitting me, I don't know what to do. And Stacy's like, absolutely not, absolutely not, I'm coming back. So Stacy moves back in with her dad to help protect Christy, which is really admirable.
Yes.
And so
being a big sister.
The literal second that Stacy walks in the door to move back in, the actual second that she walks in the door, her father rapes her. The second she walks in the door, he holds her down and rapes her. And then while she was laying there after, he kicks her. And it was in that moment, Stacy said, that she knew she was going to fight back, and she said something smart, like mm-hmm. something smart to him, and she knew that, like, this was it. We're done doing this. Yes. We're not allowing this anymore. And so, a little bit of time goes by. It's Stacy's 18th birthday. She's very excited. She's an adult. She's like, yes, I feel empowered. I feel grown. You know, as 18-year-olds do. And she went away on the weekend with her friends for a little, like, birthday event. And she brings home a gift from her friend, and the gift was a little puppy. And she named the puppy Prince. Prince the puppy. And Tom hated the puppy, of course, because it was something...
Do you need a trigger warning something with the puppy now?
No, I don't. No. Now I'm going to let you have this one. No, you know, I've had some issues with puppies in the past, but this puppy is all right.
Okay.
So Tom was pissed. He was like, first of all, why the hell do you have a dog? Second of all, why were you out with your friends? Like, I hate you. I don't want you to have any fun. He accuses her of sleeping with someone on the weekend that she's gone. And it was just, like, ridiculous. And so Stacy looks at him and she was like, you can't touch me anymore. I'm 18 years old. Yeah, I'm not yours to be touched. And so he didn't like that. And he beat her until she was unconscious. Jesus. And whenever she did wake up, though, after being beaten, he threatened her with a knife and then cut off all of her hair. It's just like a show of force. So 5 weeks later, on July the 4th in 1990, Tom tells Stacy to get rid of the puppy. He says, I don't want this puppy here anymore, whatever. And Stacy says, all right, well, I'll get rid of the puppy, but that means me and Christy are going to go too. So it's all three of us out. And Tom says, no, Christy's going to stay here because she's your replacement for my R word.
Yes.
And so then he R-words Christy to show that he...
That's a dominance power play kind of thing.
Yes. And so the girls are obviously... They've been dealing with this for years, so I know it's going to sound weird what I say, but, like, they've been dealing with this for almost a decade.
Yeah.
It's all they've known. So they kind of, after the R-word occurs... You know, Stacy comforts Christy. They get things together. They're trying to get it off their mind. They decide they're going to go to the fair. And so they go to the fair, and then, you know, while they're there, they decide, well, maybe we'll stay in a hotel for the night and just kind of, like, be away from him for tonight. Maybe he'll drink himself to sleep, and we can just have a breath and have a good night's rest, not being afraid that someone's going to bust in and beat us to death.
Or worse, yeah.
Or worse. But while they're there, they're like, you know what, I'm really afraid he's going to kill the dog, because they had to leave the puppy
home. That is such a valid guess.
And so, how sweet, what a sweet thought. And so they're like, you know what, we gotta go save the dog. So they go home and they sneak in the basement window because they're trying to get to the dog. They think, oh, I think Tom's asleep, he must be drunk and asleep, it's okay, we can get the dog. They sneak in. Unfortunately, Tom wakes up, and I think they, in one of the places I read, that Christy woke him up on accident, but I don't know that it was her fault, so I don't want to blame anybody. But either way, he got woken up, and Christy and Tom are just yelling at each other. And Stacy kind of was like, in her mind, like, we have got to leave this situation. We're leaving here no matter what. We will not be here any longer. I'm done. So Stacy grabs Tom's rifle just to, like, have it, you know, so she can say, like, we're leaving. We're done here. And she said that Tom falls asleep on the couch, and she props the rifle up behind him, I believe. And she closes her eyes and she pulls the trigger. Well, she hits his shoulder because she wasn't aiming. She was just shooting. She hits his shoulder. So Tom wakes up. He's very drunk. He's confused. He doesn't realize he's been shot. He thinks he's, like, broken his shoulder, hurt his clavicle.
Yeah.
His clavicle. His clavicle in some way. And so he just starts screaming at her. He's calling her a whore, a bitch, all these horrible things. He's yelling and screaming. And he tells her to call for help. Well, she can't, because earlier in the evening, when all the fighting was occurring and they were threatening to leave, Tom took all the phones. Because remember, it's the 80s. There was no cell phones. It was only in, like, landline phones. He had ripped all the phone cords out, so there wasn't a way to call for help. And he just keeps threatening them. And so she says that she closes her eyes and points the gun again and pulls the trigger, and he is shot in the head. And it ended a lifetime of abuse in that moment.
Yeah, but none of that's going to be undone for her and her sister.
Oh, no. No. Absolutely something she will live with for, God, forever.
I think I need to restate that. Like, well, just because you did this doesn't undo it. That's not what I mean. I mean, like, the damage is so far done to her.
Yeah.
That, I mean, like, that's permanent is what I meant to say. Sometimes say things the wrong way.
No, I don't think you said it wrong.
Yeah.
I think what you said is right, because it doesn't mean that because he is dead, all of the things are in the past and gone. Because a lot of times, you still haven't dealt with the things that are in the past, and that's why they're no longer in the past. You know what I mean?
Oh, yes.
So he's dead, you know? He's dead. And they're like, oh my God, what has happened? We've got to get out of here. So they escape back through the basement. Stacy asks a friend to go and get rid of the rifle for her. She also makes a plan with a friend that they're going to go home and, like, quote, discover her dead dad, like, you know, as if he had a break-in had occurred. And so she at first tells the police that somebody must have broken in and done it, and then I guess a friend kind of ratted her out a little bit, and so eventually she was like, yeah, I did it because my dad has done all of this to me.
Yeah, and my sister.
Well, the police are like, no, we think you killed him because you wanted his money, because you've been, in the weeks prior to his death, she'd been using his checks and his credit cards. Remember when checks were a thing?
Yeah, they still are. I have to deal with them every single day at work.
They are a check, you're right.
I had to learn how to write a check again because I forgot. It had been so long.
Checks are still happening.
Yes.
And the police had several witness statements that said that Stacy had been looking to hire an assassin for her dad's murder. So one of the people she had looked to hire was a man named Ronald Barnett, and I guess Stacy gave him a handgun or a rifle or some sort of weapon that shoots bullets. I'm sorry. And I'm alive, but I'm not here, you know? Darts, no. She gave him one to do it, and I guess he sold it or got rid of it, and he did not obviously murder him. But they did also arrest Christy, the sister, for conspiracy to commit murder because she was allegedly involved in some of the murder for hire planning. And because of that, they wanted to make sure that she was arrested because, you know, like, that's illegal, right?
I mean.
So, there's that. And they were going to use the money from the checks to hire the hitman. That's why she had been using all of the checks and things like that. She just was trying to, like, pay off people with it.
Yeah.
And that they really truly felt like this is their only way out. Like, how else can you escape this abuser other than killing them?
Yeah.
That's what made sense to them. And I get it. Like, I get that way of thinking. Well, Christy ended up getting sentenced to 5 years in prison for her involvement in the murder, and Stacy goes on to have her trial. So in the court trial, they do allow evidence of Stacy's abuse during the trial, and she testifies on her emotional, physical, and sexual abuse she endured starting at the age of 8 until the age of 18. It turns out she had told the babysitter, a psychiatrist, and a school counselor, and none of those people helped her. None of them. So, friendly PSA. Take everything seriously. Take it seriously. You can anonymously report, if you would like to the authorities. You do not have to tell them who you are or why you're reporting, necessarily. You can just tell them that it was a conversation that was had. And that's what the child said. So, please. Let do something. Don't just let these poor kids think that they don't have any help, because she tried. She did what she was supposed to do. She told someone and no one listened and no one helped her. She also testified that she had developed pelvic inflammatory disease due to the frequency of the R-word instances. Yeah. And she is unable to have children because of that.
I mean, it started too. She was so young and she was still developing. And then I can only imagine how violent. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So during the trial, experts said that she was in fact abused.
You think?
And there was a psychologist that testified that Stacy had a dissociative disorder from prolonged sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And she had acted out of terror because no one would help her. And that the police and the prosecutor basically were like, no, we don't believe that, because whenever the murder occurred, she was just very calm afterwards. And my response to that...
That first moment of peace in her entire life is my response to that.
That, and like, if you start being abused in any form, emotionally, physically, sexually, your instincts, your immediate instinct is to be as quiet, as still, yes, as small, as hidden as possible.
Yes.
Your goal is to not make a sound. You don't want to make a scene. You want to become invisible because
you hope
that that abuser doesn't see you anymore.
Yep.
Because if you aren't seen, you aren't touched.
After 3 relationships like that, yes. You freeze. You're terrified. Even when I tried to get the guts to leave, it ended immediately. And I went back into freeze because of the threats and everything else that are happening. Like,
yeah,
you just want your best. You're just praying that it all stops and it all goes away. And then you make it. That's all you can do sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just an instinct of survival.
Yeah.
And then I think her killing him was survival. I mean, at one point, a switch may or may not flip. Either way, you're doing what you can to survive.
I mean, like, I can totally understand why she was calm.
Yeah.
You don't have to be... It's not funny. You don't have to be flailing around acting mentally ill to be mentally ill.
Yeah.
A lot of people... Like, Robin Williams is a great recent example.
I was just having this... Sorry. I just had this discussion about him the other day.
You can literally be at your deepest, darkest depression.
And still making people smile and being a good person and all this stuff, and nobody knows.
Yeah. And being viewed by the world as the happiest man alive. So
it hurts my heart so much.
I don't subscribe to the comments of the prosecutor and police where they're like, well, she can't be mentally ill. She was so calm after she shot her abusive father.
No.
So that was that. The judge also reminded the jury that they couldn't use a self-defense excuse, or I don't know the right technical words,
but I know
they couldn't
use
self-defense because in the state of Missouri, where this took place in St. John, Missouri, the self-defense clause, that's what I was trying to say, says that you have to be in imminent and immediate danger for your life.
And since he wasn't posing it at that very particular point in time.
Because he was asleep.
Rather than being reactive to all the other times.
Because he was asleep, they couldn't use that. So, in 1992, Stacy's convicted of murder, and she receives life in prison without the possibility of parole. They start filing appeals. Nobody cares, basically. The appeals do nothing. But eventually, on January 10th, 2009, she gets her sentence commuted, and she ended up getting a new sentence of 20 years in prison.
Sweetie, if you're still alive, can I send you a gift basket?
Girl,
I'm just saying.
You just wait. Just wait.
I'm just saying. Just wait.
So 6 days later, she's released from prison on January the 16th, 2009. And she does go on to state that she does regret taking Tom's life before he could repent for his earthly sins, in the way that she has had the time to go over her experience with murdering him, you know, and being able to, like,
be... It's so traumatic.
Yeah, and not... I don't know. I mean, I'm not trying to justify murder, but, like, if we're gonna
it's
murder...
It's understandable.
This is the time I support it, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So, anyway, she says she regrets taking his life before he could see what wrong he was doing and be able to acknowledge that. She also got involved with a group called Healing Sisters, which help with women who are abused sexually and physically and things like that. And then in 2014, she goes on to graduate with a degree in psychology.
Get it, girl.
And she currently works as a public defender.
Get it, girl.
Giving voices to the voiceless.
Yes. I need to send you a fruit basket. Actually, like, I don't know.
Maybe not a fruit basket.
Maybe not a fruit basket, but something.
Something.
Oh, my gosh.
So I want to play for you really quickly her... she's done interviews, so if you're interested in looking her up, you certainly can. But I want to play this her talking about the moment of the murder of her father.
Let's go to the moment that you pulled the trigger and killed your father. Did you intend to kill him then?
No. I had no intention of taking his life. I wanted him to know that when I said, we're leaving and this is going to stop, that I meant it. And I wanted to be a threat, but I didn't mean to harm him.
You go back to the house. He is semi-conscious on the couch. He's been drinking, as he usually was. What happens then?
The gun was downstairs, and I think I just went back to that moment where I saw him dragging my sister into his bedroom. And I just stepped over a line that no one should have to step over.
And you shot him?
And I shot him.
The first shot doesn't kill him. He does what? How does he react?
He didn't realize that he had been shot. And he woke up screaming my name, sat up sitting my name, saying my name. And so, you know, I was terrified and immediately remorseful for what had happened. And I went and turned on the porch light and opened the door and was going to find a phone to call an ambulance. And then he just started calling me and Christy all kinds of names and blamed us for the ambulance taking too long to come. Earlier during the altercation that had happened, he took all the phones and ripped them out of the wall and had hit them. So when I went to go find a phone to save his life, I couldn't find it. And he started calling me all kinds of whores and bitches and told me to just wait until he got up from that couch. And I knew that if he ever got up, that we would die.
So what did you do?
I shot him a second time.
in the head this time?
I didn't know where it was. I had placed the gun on a ledge behind him and just closed my eyes and pulled the trigger. And I just figured whatever happened would happen.
Let's go to...
Isn't that crazy?
Wow. I'm sorry. I just...
Oh, yeah, it's okay. You can be sorry. It's a traumatic... I mean, hearing her talk about it, too, is just...
But she's also very... She's just very honest, very matter-of-fact. This is exactly what happened.
She's very put together, very beautiful.
But you can tell...
Not that matters, you know? But she's just very well-spoken.
But you still can tell that... That was not her intention. Her intention was to get out, to finally get out.
And that interview was 20 years later. You know, she had already gotten out of jail. So this is like her recount of the story.
Yeah.
But I liked this version of Perry's.
It was so justified. I'm sorry. There's just certain things that are justified in my mind, and that is.
This is one time that I'm like, I side with you, Stacey.
Yes,
you know,
absolutely.
Team Stacey in this situation. Obviously, there are other ways you can handle things. I would hope that nobody has to go through that ever, but unfortunately, it does occur. And for a kid to just not be believed and have to endure it and then eventually make a decision that's like that is just insane.
It is. I mean, no child should ever have to do that. No parent should ever do that.
No.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no. And I'm honestly surprised it lasted that long. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it went on that long before they finally... And even then, they didn't snap. They were just like, we're leaving. This is it. And then shit happens.
Yeah. And it was like the 80s, 90s. So, I mean, it was different. Like, girls couldn't, like, get on the internet and see what to do. They had no resources. They only had themselves and their school.
Oh, and what they did report, nobody believed.
Cared. Yeah. So they did everything.
So they did
could.
Try. Yeah. They took measures. They took steps.
Yeah.
They did what they could, and it eventually just ended the way it did. And honestly, I'm not mad about it.
Yeah, I'm not. I feel like Stacey is an incredible person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very strong. I mean, and then to take all that and then funnel it into ways to help other people, I just you rise, Phoenix, you rise.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm ready for yours.
Okay. Mine's not going to be very long today.
That's okay. We don't have to have it long. Sometimes it's not about the quantity. It's about the quality, baby.
Yes, it is. It is. All right, y'all. So I did mine on James Gordon Walcott. He was the son of Gordon and Elizabeth Walcott and a brother to Elizabeth Walcott Jr. They lived in Georgetown, Texas. And on August the 5th, 1967... James shot his family to death with a .22 caliber rifle. Oh, sorry, trigger warnings, murder, and guns. Obviously never think about that until in the middle of it. So, James shot his father. He just gets up one day and decides that this is it. So, he just gets up, he goes into the living room, he shoots his father twice in the chest. He shot his sister in the face, like right into her eye and in her heart. And then shot his mother twice on the left side of her head.
Do you know how old he was?
15 years old.
Okay, all right.
He is 15. His parents, of course, were dead, you know, on the scene, but the sister wasn't declared dead until she arrived at the local hospital. And, of course, in my notes, I'm like, I genuinely hope that she, you know, those situations where people survive being shot 15 times that are impossible. Like, I survived.
Yeah.
I was like, I genuinely hope that she was not aware of the situation after the attempted and eventual murder. Like, I couldn't imagine my brother doing this to us when I'm a small child and being cognizant of it the entire time before I die.
What's that movie where the people break into the house and they torture the family?
What's a million movies like that?
Okay, it's like the house next...
Is it The Strangers you're thinking?
Yeah, The Strangers.
I haven't watched it, but maybe.
Where they all are in the masks.
I think
and
so.
They break
I haven't watched
in
that one, but I think so.
You have to watch them all get tortured if you're... That's what I think
the
of.
If you enjoy that kind of stuff, like the torture stuff, you need to watch The Collector.
Okay.
That's messed up.
Okay.
It's interesting but messed up. Okay. There's twists in that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I love a twisty.
Watch The Collector.
Thriller.
My bestie in Memphis, Ernie, who I don't know if you're listening or not, but I love you and I miss you. He got me to watch that movie. I was like, Ernie, this is fucked up. But I couldn't stop watching.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was just like, that's what I was thinking. Okay, just like in I Survived, you have all these people that like are shot in the head and the heart, like all these places, and they're still remembering and aware of what's happening. Like, I hope with every hope in my heart she was not aware of all this stuff. Because my brother and I are not close, but like, he was about that age when he lived with us. I couldn't imagine that happening.
No.
Like, I just couldn't. So, and naturally, this is a very small town. Everyone is talking. So, the father, Gordon, was actually a professor at the local university. Elizabeth, his sister, was thought to be, like, the future valedictorian of her high school, so she's pretty smart. James, naturally, was very highly intellectual. He worked with the youth group at their church, and he was, like, a peace advocate. He was very, like, anti-war, everything at that point in time. So, on the night of the triple homicide...
The irony.
But trust me, it comes back later.
Okay, great.
On the night of the triple homicide, he flags someone down and tells them that his family has been shot to death. Mm-hmm. Not too soon afterwards, he very calmly admits to the crimes against his family. He's like, yeah, I did it.
He's like, well, yeah, they were shot. And it was by me.
Yeah.
So.
And he was totally calm.
You're never going to believe it.
Yeah, totally calm about it. And they're like, dude, James, WTF, like, why'd you do this?
Yeah.
Why did you kill your family?
Yeah.
You guys are a great little model for the whole community. What
Let's
happened?
Get it together.
What's what going? Happened? And James, like, well, you know, I was really tired of my mom's, like, really loud chewing.
Okay, but hold on.
I know. I read this, too. Yes, I know where you're going. I was like, look, we've all been there. Okay, some of us have an issue with that.
I'm not saying it's right.
No, it's not, but we understand.
But if you chew obnoxiously loud or suck your teeth around me, I, too, want to murder you.
I hate it. There's certain things I cannot stand, and it must be that. You know, it's the neurodivergent side.
I can't do it.
I know it's the neurodivergence. So that's what I was like. I mean, like, dude, we've all been there, but, like, that's not a justification for matricide.
Reel it in. Reel it in, sir.
He said he was really tired of his sister's bad accent.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. Like, maybe she was too country or something. Or maybe, I don't know. I have no idea about her bad accent. And he was pissed off because his father was very intolerant of the fact that he was pro-peace, anti-war, and he would never let him go to attend peace rallies.
Okay. Wait.
And I was like, I've disagreed a million times with my dad, but I've never entertained any notion of killing him because we disagree.
But the disagreement is on the fact that he's anti-gun and anti-murder, literally.
Yes.
And he's like, well, my dad doesn't support my peace, so I must murder him.
Yeah, exactly. I must make a statement.
And mom's chewing too loud again, so she's gone too.
Altogether, all of this shit is too much. God. His sister was talking in a bad accent.
Yeah,
you know, she wouldn't shut all up, but together, so. Like, it was too much. We're being horribly sarcastic as usual and laughing as usual, even though it's not funny. So, and here's the thing, though. He was very committed to the fact that his family was conniving against him to try to drive him out of his mind. He was like, they were all doing these things to drive me crazy.
So he's a touch paranoid.
A little bit.
Or he's narcissistic. One of the two.
Paranoid schizophrenia.
Oh.
Yeah. So he was given leave to attend the funerals of all of his family members, but he declined, stating, for all concerned, it's best that I do not attend.
I mean,
honestly, probably somebody else might be ready. Yes, actually,
self-aware.
Like, everyone there might be out to get you at this point in time, and you may not live past the funeral.
God forbid, this someone's chewing.
So. Yes, oh, and that too. Like, someone's popping their gum over there. Something. You know that shit. And honestly, also too, like, I read multiple articles, so all these quotes are from different articles. So yeah, a year later, he stood trial, and he was the first child there in that county to be tried as an adult for his crimes. So he was seen as being paranoid and delusional. So he was deemed insane at the time of the triple murder. So the thing is, though, he lacked zero remorse for his actions. He did not express any at all. In the months leading up to the massacre, James claimed that he was having really, like, intrusive thoughts about committing, unaliving himself.
Okay.
And, so many times, like, he attempted before that night. So, in an attempt, and he'd been huffing glue all this time, like, just getting high. So, in an attempt to unalive himself, he would huff glue in his room, trying to, like, gather that nerve, basically, to do it.
Okay.
I hate to say it that way, but that's what he was trying to do. So,
yeah.
On the night of the murders, he was high as hell on glue.
Well, have you ever watched Intervention?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to pause you
for a second.
I'm going to
assume it's about intervention.
It is. It's about substance abuse and sometimes about, like, eating disorders, things like that.
Okay.
But there's this one infamous... It's not funny. Good God. There's this one infamous episode that I want you to go watch. I'll send it to you.
Okay.
Where the girl huffs the computer dust cans.
Oh my gosh. I can't even stand the way that sound. Oh, thinking about it, I'm cringing. Okay. I cannot stand the sound of that air.
Okay, then don't watch it.
Ugh.
But her voice in it
is,
it just... I feel really bad for her.
But did it change her vocal cords doing it?
She sounds like, this.
Oh.
And there's one part where she's like, I'm walking on sunshine.
It's
and
because it just, she, yeah, I'm sure she is.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's what I just thought of.
What is in that then? I thought it was just compressed air. Is there some kind of chemical also?
I think there's chemicals in there because remember it can explode, right? Doesn't it get like really cold?
I've never used it. I don't know.
What do you mean? You're not huffing?
And when people do use it, I'm like, please stop.
But yeah, so if you know that episode, send us a little message.
Yeah.
I'll post or it. Just maybe I'll post it in the Facebook so you guys can all see what I'm talking about. Anyway. Okay, so he's huffed up.
Huffed.
He's all huffed up.
Yes.
And he's like, I'm ready.
So.
To.
Hi, Sal. And he's just like, you know what? This is it. So it was decided in the trial that he'd be committed to a psychiatric hospital, and that's where he remained for 6 years.
Okay. So he's 21.
Still with no remorse.
Great.
James, and it was reported that he was actually smiling and happy about the verdict. That he was deemed unfit.
Yeah.
Of course. I'm just like, clearly.
Yeah.
No.
Right.
This is you guys don't think that this is okay? Like, so again, that smug smile that we hate so much.
So much.
Oh my God. So, until 1974, James was institutionalized at Rusk State Hospital. And this is one thing that I was just, like, elaborating a little bit too much. So, I'm like, 15 minutes, which is 900 seconds, which is a quarter of an hour.
Uh-huh.
I know you understand by now, like, where I'm going with this. 15 minutes after 3 murders, his own family, a trial deemed him insane. He spent years locked up. He never showed remorse for his actions. 15 minutes is the only thing that stood between him and the world. And he was deemed rehabilitated. I don't think that you can still, like... Well, yeah, like, when you're getting ready to be released out, and they usually, just like everything else, like cops and stuff, they kind of go over everything with you. I don't know. I can't still say that someone's rehabilitated when they still don't even give a shit that they killed people.
Yeah.
Like, to me, in my heart, that does not prove to me anything. Then again... I know things happen and people can be rehabilitated.
Yeah,
but I just
Stacey,
wonder there's certain things.
Even
that...
Stacey has immediate remorse,
exactly.
She says.
Remorse.
Immediate
this
remorse
kid
for
has
not
none.
Even killing him, but just shooting her dad.
Yes.
And
yes.
She was abused, so I don't know.
Yeah. So he never had to stand trial for slaughtering his family because he was deemed insane. So in 15 minutes. And I'm putting, like, all these quotes in my notes for articles. But here's one of the quotes from Morbidology article. Wilson Nicar, the chief psychiatric social worker at Rusk Hospital, described Walcott as a dependable, trustworthy, and highly intelligent individual. The same year he enrolled in Stephen F. Austin University. After this, Walcott immediately, when he was released, changed his name to James St. James. And attempted to completely vanish into a newly made life for himself, where he went and earned a doctorate in psychology. I was trying not to laugh when you were talking about Stacey, because I'm like, boom, I did too.
Yeah, but mine's not like a sociopath. No. That makes me suspicious. You think he's a sociopath? He was a sociopath,
well,
and
I mean,
he learned
saying,
psychology so
yeah,
that
they were
he
talking
could,
about like, there's that too, like
that
how
he could
to
understand,
it.
Yeah. Like, oh, this is how I need to mask better.
Yes, and there's like even like I had other questions too, like at the bottom of this as well. But like, so he did. He earned a doctorate in psychology. 27 years pass.
Okay, so now he's 48,
and his past is discovered because. He is a professor
at a university, Millikan University. It's a Presbyterian school in Illinois.
Imagine.
He is a professor at behavioral psychology and a chairman in the department. When all this time, nobody knew who he was. So the school, when they found out, because I want to say that there was something going on for like a couple years. Wait, they were trying to break this news and the person found out who he was.
What would you do if you were in, if you were this man's student or colleague and you've been just hanging out with this dude, at taking your little lunch breaks together in the teacher's lounge, in the professor's quarters.
Yeah.
And, I don't know why I said it like that. In the professor's quarters.
Like all the time. Hey, you're going to get shot with that bad accent.
You're right, imagine that. You've just been having coffee and crumpets with this dude and then come to find, you're like, wow, he's, you know, behavioral psychology professor.
Yeah.
That murdered his whole family. Oh.
Like I said, I wrote out all my questions. Like, we're on the same page.
Ugh.
Completely on the same page.
Okay, so what does the school do?
Naturally, the school is attacked because the news is breaking out about this guy that's a chairman on the board. He's, you know, teaching everybody's kids, and he is a confessed murderer. So in response to those inquiries, they stated that given the dramatic experiences of Dr. James's childhood, his efforts to rebuild his life and obtain a successful professional career have been remarkable. That is the way that Millikan responded to this.
The school's like, yeah, he killed somebody once, but he's all right.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's been great with us. So,
like, he's cool.
So. Like, and I already wrote this at the bottom, too. I'm like, but what if he's still killing people?
And nobody knows.
Exactly.
I'm just saying.
So, this is a statement from an NBC article that I read, and it says, I look at this from, this is somebody that they're talking to, I look at this from a law enforcement perspective, and I just have a problem with somebody who didn't disclose this information, and I think it was a guy named Dawson. He said, if I were a parent and my kids are going to Millikan, that's something that I would want to know. So, and this is what I said, I was like, okay, so like, I understand, because we want disclosure the same way that we register sex offenders. Like, yeah. We want to know who these people are. But at the same time, could you blame this guy for wanting to be anonymous and not be known for all this stuff? You know?
I mean, I can't blame it.
Exactly. You know,
let's say he really did have a good life after that. Do I think he deserves to have one? I don't know. Because he did end three lives. But if he really was insane and now he's better, like, what a comeback story.
Yeah.
I don't always believe that your decision should haunt you for the rest of your life.
And that's what I put. I was like, in my mind, though, there was a complete lack of empathy there. Right. There was responsibility and concern. He had none. And he was smiling in court the minute they declared him an insanity plea. Like, I feel that that person is, like, still there because he did receive a paranoid schizophrenic diagnosis. But, like, was he really rehabilitated? Because I see the concern of the community, but I also see the track record of the views that they this university has seen for, 26, 27 years.
Yeah.
That's so, it's so, very double-edged.
Yeah,
like,
it's such an individual case-by-case thing. Yes. Like, you know, just because you
and have, like I said, what if he's...
But not every paranoid schizophrenic murders.
No.
So,
No. Yeah, we're not trying to say that.
No. I'm just but saying, I'm like, just
you're
like,
deemed this. You, all these things are laid out facts.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that person is gone. Or that person is still there.
Right.
So, yeah. So, 11 years after becoming a professor, he actually won an award for teaching and leadership. It was, like, in the 90s.
Wow.
And then once the truth came to light, however, there are members of the community that were naturally demanding that he be removed from his position. So, one person mused about how much James hated his father, Gordon Sr., but yet he ended up in the same occupation as his father.
So interesting.
And so this is a quote from the Daily Beast from one of Walcott's former students.
Okay.
And she said, Dr. St. James has not willingly spoken to the media about his past, and I can't blame him. But days before I wrote this piece, I sent a message to him offering him my support of the new life that he has created. I didn't expect a reply, considering the amount of mail this news storm must have created. But whatever you may believe of Dr. St. James and his past, in his present, he is a teacher first and foremost. Despite the current news cycle, he remains responsive and available to students both past and present. He answered my email with the same intelligence and willingness for discourse that I remember from his classroom many years ago. As one who has the privilege of teaching both high school and college students, I find great good in his commitment to his students, as well as his dedication to the profession he has spent his adult life serving. Does that negate the horror of what happened in 1967? No, nothing can. But knowing that he has devoted his life to a purpose that might save other families from the same terrible fate that he visited upon his own, to me, that is far more justified than most victims ever receive. So, maybe I'm naive. Perhaps it is my fervent wish that people can be redeemed that makes me write these words. But I stand by Dr. St. James, and I am hopeful that since he demonstrated that there is a way out of the darkness, that others can find it too.
Well, now I feel that.
That's like, I feel that way. It's very 50-50. I feel the exact way of there's redemption. You're trying to do this. You're trying to help other people. You have really contributed a lot.
Yeah.
It doesn't negate what you did. No. But hopefully this is the person that you are.
I guess it's kind of like
who you were.
It's kind of like, how do you move forward with someone if they don't ever apologize or like take accountability for their actions?
And I don't know if since then he has. You know, I didn't see that written anywhere. And naturally people might be suppressing that because it's part of the thing. Like the hype. Right. Oh, well, you know. It's like maybe he does express it now. I don't know. But I do agree that if you're taking the steps to try to do something better, but I just still feel deep down, I'm just like, I wonder if that person is still there, and I don't know, the accountability.
Your mind wonders. Yeah. The mind wonders about that. I don't know. I'm conflicted on that. I do want to know what everyone thinks, though.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on his new life? Like, gosh, it's not even on his record.
Yeah.
Like,
because he became a new person.
Yeah.
And but I want to say that
he wasn't even criminally charged.
No, he wasn't.
So it shouldn't.
They tried him as an adult, and he was not charged.
It's not like when you apply for a job and they're like, "Are you a felon?" Yes, I murdered my parents. You know,
yes.
It's like, no, I'm great. Never do anything. LOL.
Yeah, pretty much. And even then, it's like you become a new person and assume a new identity. So that person wasn't convicted of a felon. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah. If you could have a new identity, what would it be?
I honestly never thought of that.
Me either, but I am right now.
That would like include also me knowing how to do other things. Having the knowledge and such to do things. I don't know. I probably would just pick, if I were to just pick up and leave and do something, I probably would still pursue photography.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, that happened this week also.
What?
Me.
What?
The scholarship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, talk about yourself, child. This is your spotlight.
That just, like, actually reminded me of that. But, yeah, like, that's what I probably do.
Are you
not
going to brag on yourself?
You know me better than that.
Am I going to brag on you?
You know that it took me years and years and years and years and years of completely shooting people down, and it's only been in the last year that I'm like, you know what? I'm okay at this.
Listen.
I'm okay at this.
She's not going to tell you, but I'll tell you. Tell me that I... Or correct me if I'm wrong, because I feel like I don't know the details properly. But Ellie applied for a scholarship to photography school and was given the scholarship.
I was.
So I'm going to need everybody, snaps for Ellie. Everybody, round of applause. It's very exciting. She won't talk about it, but I'm going to talk about it because she's very passionate about her feelings about photography and she loves it very much. And she's good at it, but she will never tell you that. So... there you are, everyone. I don't know why I'm being so aggressive, but I'm like, you're great!
Because I can't be. I'm so good at pumping other people up that I'm just like,
I understand that.
Yeah.
I'm really excited. When do you start?
So I'm supposed to start in the fall. Supposed to. I still have some other stuff to do.
How long is the program?
So it is a bachelor's degree, but okay. I already have 2 years under my belt from Memphis, so all I have is 2 years left.
Perfect.
So yeah.
Oh my god, I can't wait to learn what you learn.
Oh man. I don't have any like experience. I just do what I do. And it was weird too, because like I never applied for the school. I just went in and I spoke to someone. And then they saw my work on Instagram, and they were like, we need you here at the school.
Love that.
So, like, I did an application, but it was really just, like, standard to do it. And I've been trying to do this for, like, the past year and a half, but with my health being so bad, and, like, I can't take out all these student loans and all that other stuff, so I'm really, 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 like, banking on scholarships, because that's the only way I'm going to be, like, allowed to go.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, like, I'm not a crier, but normally the late, because she hasn't given up on me. Like, I keep pushing her off because, like, I couldn't do it because of the money and then my health and all this other stuff. And she just refused to give up on me. Like, refused. Mm-hmm. And she always texted me, but she called me one day. And I'm like, you don't ever call me?
Yeah.
I'm going to see what's up. And then she called, and I stepped outside at work. I'm like, hey, what's up? Like, you called. What's going on? And she told me, and, like, I started crying and shaking, and I couldn't, like, talk to her. She's like, are these good tears or bad tears? And I'm trying to tell her that they're good ones.
I don't know. I'm just crying.
I'm just like, oh, my gosh. You know, whatever. But anyways. So, yeah, like, I was just so, so excited. But I'm also always, always, always focused on the bad things happening and the other shoe to drop that I don't want to get excited. Well, because anytime I get excited, I get my heart broken.
I used to say that I was cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, that's a good one, yeah.
That's what I said during all my pregnancies. Both pregnancies. I was like, I'm cautiously optimistic that this one will stick.
So and now look at your beautiful babies.
God, they're wild.
They're the best.
Oh my god, I'm so excited for you. Congratulations.
Yay. You did it.
Okay, so next week we are hoping to do Ed and Lorraine.
Yeah. Yes. Let's do it.
So we're going to do that. And I'm okay with this. I'm going to sage the space and maybe put some salt down.
Yeah, we can do all of those things.
I might purchase a crucifix. Does anyone have a crucifix?
Well, yes. Actually, I have a permanent one on me.
Okay, great.
This used to be a crucifix.
You can just live in my room and you know, if you put your arm upside down, I'll know something's going on.
Oh my god! And it's like, well,
the demons are here.
No. Put your arm down. Yeah, no, this was a cover-up for one that I had, so technically I always have a crucifix on me.
I love that. Love that.
All right, yeah, I'm excited about that. I really am. Like, even the freaky stuff aside, like, I'm glad we did this one too. Like, just like a little break.
Yeah, we figured a good one. It did get kind of dark last week, so let's lighten it up with some.
But I like already murder. Found the one that I've even got the crimes. I've got the photos and everything.
Right. Oh wow, you're ready. I am a last minute gal.
No, I am too. But like that was something that I was like I've always fascinated me, which all of this does.
Yeah.
That's something that you don't get to talk about. So yeah. I was like, let's talk about it. And then this, like, last night, like, me and Annie both, Annie's like, please make me do research. And I'm like, please make me do research.
I could not for the life
ADHD,
of me.
ADHD, last minute, always.
Well, I went through, like, all the big cases you've heard about, like, the Menendez brothers, like, is it Menendez?
Well, I mean, or
is that
Shawn? You've got other people, too. No, I know who you're talking about.
Shawn Mendes?
Well, not the singer, but... There are the two brothers, yes.
Is that what okay.
Yes. I saw them. But, and I mean, then, we could have even, like, Kemper killed his freaking mom.
Yeah.
You know, but I just didn't want, I'm saving the classics for, like, the big.
I know. I feel like we're never going to be able to stop this podcast.
I'm okay with that.
Me too. It's for life.
It's okay.
Okay. All right, spooky bitch.
You're my favorite. You know how weird it is, too, for, like, people to be, like, my murder bestie, and they're like...
What? You're who?
Look, if you don't have a murder bestie...
Then you can be ours.
Exactly. That's why you're here.
Welcome to the podcast. Also, just FYI, if you haven't, please rate us on whatever platform you're listening to.
And follow us.
Leave a comment, leave a review, leave a rate.
Invite your friends.
Find us on Facebook. Find us on Instagram.
Dude, I'm so excited. Like, I know everybody else is like, oh, we have millions of followers. But I'm like, we have 88 followers.
No, I'm really excited.
Please keep inviting your friends, guys.
And we always post, well, I say we, but really it's you. You always post good memes in the group. So if you're a meme gal or guy or in between or just a person.
Just whoever you
are. Then you can certainly join and see all the fun memes.
Yes. Like, on Instagram, I mostly just post, like, what we're doing pertaining to our weeks. Very rarely do I post anything in between. But, yeah, no, the Facebook one is just everything
Facebook's
all the time.
Facebook's for the funnies.
And I keep getting... I'm so bad about doing the free-for-all days, like, where you guys can post your little side hustles or, like, your main hustle or whatever it is. Like, if you're in the area and you're a hairdresser or you sell furniture. I don't know. Like, whatever it is, if you're wanting to get people... to come and see you, I need to be posting this. So I posted one this morning for Sunday. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to try maybe to, like, set an alarm and remind myself, like, every week to post. That way you guys can share your stuff. Because, you know, it's awesome and we care.
Yes. I want to see. Plus, I like to buy things. So, if you
we do love buying
are creative and make stuff, I want to buy it.
There you go.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Oh my goodness. Another week down.
I know, and it's already over.
Cheers to next week.
At first, we were both just like, this is going to be a short podcast. And then we get here, and it's like,
it's still shorter than last time.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
It is. But, and if you were committed enough to actually listen to the entire podcast.
I had several people talk to me about it. Yes. So I know people listen to it.
Yay.
So,
okay.
But yeah.
I'm glad.
All right, friends. That's all we got for this week.
That is it.
Thanks for listening. We love you.
Yes, we do. Y'all are the absolute best. And you're just like, keep recruiting other spooky bitches.
Yes. Let everyone know. Please.
Like, please, please.
Please, please. All right, friends. We will talk to you later.
All right.
Bye. Bye.